Every so often you hear about someone who puts incredible craftsmanship and materials into a musical instrument. You know, they grew the tree, they harvested the wood, they carefully assembled a guitar or violin. This is not that story. Not quite. For the next 20 minutes, we'll talk about musical instruments we all can make without tremendous effort or expense. The details are contained in a book called Junkyard Jam Band, DIY Musical Instruments and Noisemakers. It's by David Eric Nelson, who's a writer of science fiction, of essays, and another book called Snip, Burn, Solder, Shred, about geeky projects you can make with your kids. David Eric Nelson, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
So this book sounds like an expanded version or a more focused version of what you did with Snip, Burn, Solder, Shred.
What I found, Snip, Burn, Solder, Shred includes like 24 projects that really span, everything from simple sewing projects, making a sock squid that you can turn into a sock Cthulhu, to fairly complicated soldering projects. And what I found that people were really most responsive to, or at least that I would get the most, email about and questions, were the musical instrument projects that take up the middle portion of that book.
Mm-hmm. Some fun stuff in there as well. Are you a musician yourself in the traditional sense?
No, I come from a profoundly non-musical family. Most people I found, their parents encouraged them to learn an instrument or at least give it a try. That was not the case in my family. So I never really touched a musical instrument until I was in my 20s. I was a teacher myself, and a lot of my students were really fine musicians. I was at a sort of hippie school for troubled youth. And so it was a place that we could kind of meet up. You know, they weren't very strong academically or had emotional issues they were working through. I was fine in those regards, but I was totally non-musical. So it was an opportunity for them to introduce me to things and teach me things and kind of teach me that we're all musical. We can all, play songs.
We've all got some in us in that sense.
Yeah, certainly. More of us than we think.
Uh-huh. The first message I get in this book is don't be afraid to tinker with your stuff. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I find people are really really afraid of this, of DIY in general. And on the one hand, that kind of makes sense. You know, all of us use these very complicated devices, computers, even our appliances, are complicated to the point of being downright dangerous. You're not, super enthusiastic about opening up your oven and seeing what's wrong with that gas valve for good reason. But it kind of translates down and people feel very uncomfortable, trying to make things themselves, sort of putting themselves out there a little bit. And so one of my big goals is to make projects that can sort of onboard people to DIY, that they're immediately accessible, where anyone can succeed right off and get that charge of having made a thing themselves that makes a neat sound that's fun to play with.
There are 16 different projects in the book, and you say it's not baby-fied, so it's not made too simple. I mean, what skills and tools are you going to need to try to pull some of these off?
I think of them as fairly standard, like household tools. So in the tool range, if you own a saw, a drill, and a couple screwdrivers and maybe some tin snips or a decent pair of scissors and a utility knife, you should be pretty set. So the kind of tools that most of us have shoved under the kitchen sink or in the disused tool room in our basement. With the addition, I really love electronic projects or projects that combine acoustic and electronic. So a soldering iron kind of goes in that list, but I've included sort of a full section at the back that introduces people to electronics and soldering, because that's another skill that's really straightforward, but so few people are taught it now that people see it as very mystical and kind of beyond them, when really it is a very, very easy.
I know, it is kind of funny. It's like going to a museum now sometimes to look for a soldering iron at the store.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first things in the book, in the way of a project, is the Slinky phone. Let's hear this before we talk about it. So now we know where they get all those outer space sound effects from the space movies. This is pretty interesting stuff. What did you do with this device? Well, how'd you make the Slinky into a Slinky phone?
I love this because this is just the most bone simple project, and it always gets such a great response from people when they see it, because all you've done here is taken a plastic party cup, the kind of pint cup that we all have at our summer parties that people drink beer and soda out of, and you're just you're just tying a slinky to it. It's just a standard metal slinky from the toy store. And people look at it, it doesn't look like much, but to the first time that you let go of that slinky, let it drop while holding the cup so it stretches out and the bottom of the slinky hits the ground, you get those wonderful reverberating zips and zaps. It's actually, that sound is kind of like the space blaster sound in our head, in part because some of the blaster sounds in the original Star Wars were made by pounding the metal guy lines that keep telephone poles straight, pounding those with a wrench and recording the sound. And it's basically the same effect. But again, that's a project literally any parent can make, because we all have a slinky kicking around our house and we all have those party cups. And it's really just a matter of popping two holes in the bottom and using a length of fish line or dental floss so that you can tie the bottom loop of that slinky right up against the bottom of that cup. And when you drop the slinky, the cup naturally amplifies it, and the waves, you know, going up and down that slinky is what you hear with that wonderful reverberation.
That's some fun stuff. Junkyard Jam Band is the book by David Eric Nelson. He's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Maybe you have some stories of your own do-it-yourself musical instruments you'd like to share, or some questions you'd like to ask Eric, David rather, 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. David, are many of these revealed in this book for the first time, or have you picked up a bunch of other ideas that people had used previously?
You know, it's funny because I think of them as fairly straightforward adaptations of, you know, the kind of things that you find on data sheets, for example, of, you know, sample circuits for some of these ICs, or really well-known techniques for amplifiers. People looking at them are like, wow, this is really new and different. And I think part of that comes from taking these sort of basic elements and combining them. So to me, they're not new inventions, but I find that, you know, frequently when people look at them, it strikes them in a really new way because it's juxtapositions of pieces that hadn't immediately occurred to them.
Well, just when I think we're going to spend lots of time soldering, though, you show us the elephant trumpet. What's going on with this instrument?
That's that's like a classic that I think most of us saw in like science class as a kid, where you have a piece of hose or garden hose that you're using like a trumpet. Because a trumpet, when push comes to shove, is just a very long hose that's been curled up. So, I mean, you have a funnel in one end, and then in the other end, we're using a hose coupling to be sort of an ersatz mouthpiece. And really the key there is that you have a really long hose. You have about 16 feet of hose, which gives you this really nice full sound. And it's another instrument that really surprises people because it looks like nothing. You know, it's a couple items from the hardware store. But it gives such a rich, full sound that it just immediately makes people laugh, makes them happy, and makes them want to take hold of it and give it a try. And that's kind of the goal here.
Oh, true. To get more hands on the stuff you make. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's so much to learn here. What is a Fipple block, and where does one find a Fipple block?
So most of us are actually really familiar with Fipple flutes. We just never think of them that way. But like a coach's whistle is a Fipple flute. And so this Fipple block is really just a piece of dowel rod that's blocking the end of a piece of PVC so that we can have a nice narrow airway. If you've ever blown across the top of a soda bottle, or around here we make whistles out of acorn caps by placing our thumbs against them. When you blow across the top, you get that nice full sound because you have that nice thin stream of air you're blowing out of your lips and just going right across the top. So having a piece of dowel rod inserted in the end of a piece of PVC, you can make a nice narrow airway, and that's kind of the secret to getting a good solid whistle sound.
And there's a good use here for old Altoid boxes, which is the beginnings of us dismantling our own electronics in this book. What have you done with the Altoid box here?
So you're probably looking at the scratch box.
Yes.
Which is a nice one of the nice things about outmoded technology like cassette players is that a lot of us have them kicking around in boxes in our basement, and we're not going to be very upset if we break them apart for parts. But that the playhead in a cassette is a relatively sensitive magnetic transducer, so it can detect small variances in magnetic fields, which is what's encoded on old-style tape cassettes for those of your listeners who recall tape cassettes. And the thing is, the magnetic stripe on the back of your credit card or the gift cards that you get around the holidays, those are also magnetically encoded and can also be listened to using that playhead. So, you know, we tear the playhead out of an old tape deck and just wire it up very simply. You know, it's kind of two solder points so that we can hook it to an amplifier. And then when you run an old credit card or an old gift card across that, you can hear that magnetically encoded information, which, of course, you know, you can't decode because you are not a computer. But it makes a lot of really interesting sounds. And what it sounds like most recognizably to us now is when DJs are scratching records, which, again, is someone, you know, running an audio stream of information back and forth at a speed different than what we'd expect.
That waka 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 sound, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the waka waka, the chirps. And it's fun in part because you'll find that lots of different kinds of cards and magnetic strips that are on, you know, the keys they use in hotels now and parking passes and such have a lot of different interesting sounds on them. And there's a lot of information encoded on those, which means there's a lot of room to explore as you work up and down this piece of magnetic strip. In fact, a reader in Norway just sent me some pictures of a scratch box he'd built using the instructions in the book, and that he'd added a preamplifier to, and it just looked awesome. You know, it was really thrilling, you know, to see it coming from that far away, because, of course, you know, he has different magnetic stripe things that they use in Norway in terms of parking passes and such than I have access to here. So it's neat to hear the different sounds that come out of people's different environments.
But you don't get any sound, though, if you don't rub it across a magnetic strip of some kind, though?
Of some kind. And I mean, that goes to include, you know, old cassette tapes, VHS cassettes, computer encoding tapes. You know, that was a really popular technology for holding information for a long time before solid state prices came down as far as they have. You know, now we all have thumb drives.
Sure.
Not very interesting to rub against things.
Right. Everything's stored digitally now. We're talking about Junkyard Jam Band, the new book by David Eric Nelson. It's about DIY musical instruments and noisemakers that you can construct yourself at home without too much effort and too many tools. Join us on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, in my youth, I was given a boombox that had been apparently belonged to my maternal grandfather. And the boombox consisted of a long stick of wood, I think a 2x2, with a cross piece at the top with a couple of tambourine-sized cymbals on each side of a crossbar there, and then a long wire string and a spring-loaded thing at the base, so you could bounce it up and down, strum it, and make noise with it. You know, you could strum it. I suppose if you had a violin bow, could have used that.
Wow, that but sounds fun.
It made terrible. It was a terrible, awful noise. It was just ridiculous.
All right, let's see if we can find it from David there. Thanks for sharing the story, Mark. Appreciate that.
You know, it's funny because I've seen precisely such an instrument once in my life. I was in Milwaukee visiting a friend, and we were at a bar near her house that was entirely empty. We were the only people in it except for the two old Polish men who were playing the open mic night, I guess it was. And it was a man playing an accordion, and his friend was playing that exact sort of instrument.
Uh-huh.
It was a great cacophony, but it was a kind of a wonderfully controlled cacophony. And it was such a neat counterpoint to the accordion, to kind of the fluidity with which his friend was playing accordion. It was actually really, really cool to see. I'm glad someone else has seen this instrument, because I didn't think to ask if there was a name or if it was something this guy had made up on his own. And it was just such a neat pairing.
That is fun. So let's talk about the Junkyard Percussion, though. And in fact, we have a sample here that I want Megan to play. So here's a little run of Junkyard Percussion. Well, there's a couple different things there. Can you unpack that for us, David Eric Nelson?
Sure. The first portion there was kind of an example from the Junkyard Percussion section of the book. And I've got to give a shout out right now. A young man named Vince Russo helped me enormously with that section. He's a really great percussionist. He's best known now as a washboard player with the Appleseed Collective, who are kind of an American roots band that tour around the country. really wonderful music if you get a chance to hear them or find them online. And Vince was a really great resource about, you know, because he had training as a kind of a formal percussionist at a kit, and then he'd adopted the washboard as he began touring, because touring with a drum kit, very heavy, touring with a washboard, much easier. And so what you actually heard playing there, that was me playing. The rhythmic clicking sound was me playing the spoons. Someone taught me to play the spoons as a kid, and I've always gotten a kick out of it just because there's always spoons available. That kind of nice, rich ringing sound was platters from an old hard drive. Hard drive platters, one, are beautiful if you crack open the hard drive, because they're so shiny. They're chrome-plated, I believe. But two, of this nice, thin metal, and make just the most wonderful chimes. And then the rattling background there was a tambourine made just from beer bottle caps, flattened beer bottle caps. And then following that was the Cigar Box Ukulele. There's an electric acoustic ukulele project in the book that uses a pickup you can wind yourself with supplies that you get, again, at the hardware store, and if there's still a Radio Shack in your area for the winding wire.
Sure, we got a few. Junkyard Jam Band is the book by David Eric Nelson. He's our guest on The Exchange, 800-838-3760, and jx@jeffnet.org. So pardon me for jumping in on you there, but the wiring and the circuit bending stuff is really interesting to me, because it really is about taking apart stuff you have around the house and changing what it's used for.
Mm-hmm. And circuit bending is so much fun because, you know, one of the things that kind of pains me, I love electronics so much. I think we kind of all do, even if, you know, we're not enthusiastic about it. We're all walking around with supercomputers in our pockets constantly. But, you know, especially toys, you know, I have two kids and, you know, they kind of whip through what they're interested in and what they're willing to play with so quickly. And you kind of feel bad because you're cycling through these things so quickly. And so it's neat to find ways to repurpose it, because the other piece is that, you know, these toys are mass produced in big factories, a lot of times to kind of with sort of general circuit boards inside of them, which means that, you know, like the speaker that they put inside of a little keyboard made for kids, you know, that wasn't spec'd out based on like what's going to make the best sound, you know, God knows when you hear it. You know, it's spec'd out on what the cheapest part was available in the factory at the time, which means that sometimes, you know, gosh, you had a, you know, an output so you can, you know, put it to a decent guitar amp, and you discover that, you know, the sound circuit in there is actually making really fascinating, rich sounds with like a lot of bass that that speaker couldn't reproduce. Or as you begin poking around, you discover that really simple modifications, really simple tweaks of the circuitry can make really fun changes in, like, you know, the speed and pitch at which it's playing its pre-recorded or its internally generated sounds. It's a fun exploratory piece, because it also gets people handling electronics in an unconventional way, because again, so much of the electronic stuff that we use is so expensive and so complicated, we're kind of frightened of it. Whereas if you have a keyboard that your kid doesn't even want to play with anymore, you open it up, you start poking around, you know, worst case scenario, you fry the keyboard, you know, you weren't keeping it forever to begin with. Best case scenario is that you find some neat sound that, you know, some result that you like that encourages you to say, hey, I can open up this other thing. I can start playing with this other piece.
Yeah, be careful, though. As you point out, make sure you're dealing with things that are battery-powered so that the voltage
certainly
is not too high. Yes.
Yeah. The number one rule is, you know, nothing you'll ever hear me say should be taken to be giving you permission to mess with wall current. Whereas anything battery-powered, if in the United States it was made to be handed to a child, you can trust that it is not going to electrocute you.
Sounds good. So I want to play another one of your instruments here. This is a combination of building and electronic repurposing. This is the Twang and Roar Kalimba. Let's hear a little bit of this. So the kalimba is the thumb piano, as I think we've come to know it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, it is.
And so what have you done to make this one?
Okay. So this is another fairly, from the acoustic end, it's fairly straightforward. The body of the kalimba is a cigar box because I love cigar boxes, and I have a huge pile of them. We're getting the sound there is a real thin metal rod that's called piano wire that you can get in a lot of hardware stores, for example. although you can also use a lot of repurposed materials, like bicycle spokes can be make for good kalimba tines, as can, if you have street sweepers in your area, the bristles off the street sweeper are great.
Huh.
And so, I mean, that cigar box is just acting as the resonating body, you know, the same as it, you know, does in a cigar box ukulele, or cigar box guitars are very popular. And then I've added actually a pair of pickups to it. Because we're using metal tines, we can use a magnetic pickup like you find on a conventional electric guitar. And you can pull one out of a broken guitar, or you can wind one yourself really easily. And that gives you a really cool, fuzzy, kind of overdriven sound, sort of like a Fender Rhodes electric piano from the 60s, which also, when they are being played really hard, get this cool, like, crunchy, overdriven sound because of the way that big piece of metal, the Rhodes electric piano, used vibrating pieces of metal and magnetic pickups in a similar way. And so it has kind of a distinctive overdriven sound. And then it also has an acoustic pickup built into it. So you can get sort of the clean sound of the tines, but also the sound of like your hands on the instrument. So you can use it in a more percussive way. And in fact, it comes to mind because a pal of mine, Adam Stein, who lives in the Portland area, now, who's a luthier and a guitarist, had helped me work out the design for that one, because cigar boxes are idiosyncratic resonators at best. And so, you know, there's certain things you can do to get the best results out of them, and that's included in the project.
That's amazing to hear about a luthier who's actually going to spend some time on cigar boxes, but they are fun little structures to play with. And yes, I've noticed I've got a couple myself that can make very, very different sounds. We're going to go out with just another collection of sounds that you created, plus our usual music here. But I want to thank you for joining us today to talk about, to give us some courage to go after some of our electronics and stuff around the house and make our own instruments. The book is called Junkyard Jam Band. David Eric Nelson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.